We're holding. Okay, so we're holding on Gimelman Bays, three lines from the bottom. We left off in the middle of a discussion yesterday. We had a braisa that said that if an egg gets that we said that if an egg gets mixed up with even 1,000 others, then they're all osur. And we were talking about is that an egg that there's a suffix whether it was laid on Yom Tov or not, or is it an egg that there's a suffix whether it came from a chicken that's a chayfa. And we were discussing the question why indeed would an egg not be batel? It's not something according to Rish Lakish, yes, because eggs usually are sold by number. You don't usually sell them by in bulk. But according to Rabbi Yochanan, it has to be only something, at least according to Rabbi Yochanan's understanding of Rabbi Meir, only something that's always sold by number is not bottle. So according to Rabbi Yochanan, who would be saying that the Chachamim are even more lenient, only say there's six or seven things that are in bottle. So who would be the author of the previous braisa who said that an egg is not bottle even at 1,000? So we started saying that it would be the Tana of the Mishnah, the braisa of Litzra Ptzias. Who says that it applies even to something d'rabbanan? It's not, as we learn in a Mishnah. Litra ptzias shadaras al pi igul. If you have a litra, which is a measurement, of ptzias, dried figs, shadaras al pi igul, which you pressed it on top of a cake of figs. The way it worked in those days, Rashi says, is that you take figs, you dry them. Then they take a miksoya, which is a kind of knife, and use it to cut off the stems of them, which would also help to so you could more easily press them. Then they'd press them together they'd use some kind of round container. We'll see in the Mishnah.
They'd dry them, they'd cut them,
they'd press them using a round container so that they form a round shape. Rashi says it's like a wheel of cheese. They'd have many such wheels, and then when it came time, when they wanted to eat them, they'd break them apart with a pitchfork or something. They'd break off chunks with a pitchfork and sell them. So here you have a litra of ktsiyos, of dried figs, of truma, which you use them to make one of these igulim, one of these circles, one of these wheels. Ve'eni yodeh be'ez igul drasa, but you don't know in which circular form, in which circular mold you did it. So you have a whole bunch of circular molds in front of you, each one with a wheel of pressed figs in it, and one of them is truma, and you don't know which is which. Or darsa al pi chavis, or a similar thing. You could use another round thing like a chavis, a barrel. So you pressed it on the top of a barrel, then you did it. It's a chavis darsa, and you don't know in which barrel you pressed it. Or al pi kaveres, v'enyadeh be'ez a kaveres darsa, or over on a basket. A kaveres literally means a beehive, but it means like a round basket, and you don't know which one. So Rav Meir says that the machloikas between the earlier Tanoim, Rav Eliezer and Rav Yeshua, is as follows. Rav Eliezer Oimer, Roya Nesel Yonis Ki'ilahin Pruder, we imagine the top layers as though they were separated, and then the bottom ones can combine together to be master of the top ones, meaning like this. Truma, we mentioned yesterday that oil you need 200 times as much to be mevatel. Truma you need 100 times as much. If you have less than 100 times as much truma, the whole thing is called meduma. A zar is not allowed to eat it. You have to sell it to a kohen. You have, for example, let's say 50 things of cholin and one of truma. So you sell it. So you sell the 51 pounds of it to a kohen for the price of 50 pounds because 1 pound of it is truma. It belongs to him already. As opposed to, if it's 101, then all you have to do is take out 1 pound and give it to the kohen. The kohen doesn't end up getting shortchanged, and you, the Yisrael, are allowed to eat the other 100.
Why difference? Both contain truma, one out of 51.
Because that's the difference. So the one out of 100 is what's needed for truma. Hey, the Gemara learns it, didn't it? The Gemara learns it from Sochim. I don't understand. You need one out of 100. You need that the truma is 100, is 1 over 101 of the mixture, or less.
Or less.
If it's any more than that, then it's meduma. Then the whole thing is also to resorti.
Any more meaning there's more truma or there's more...
There's more truma.
More truma.
So now here, what you have is as follows. To go back to the way that they did this, so they'd have, they'd take a bunch of figs, press it in, make one wheel, then on top of it they do another one, and on top of so in the end you end up with, let's say, a barrel with layers of cakes of figs pressed together. Now, when you did this one of truma, it's on the top of one of the barrels. You know for sure it's not at the bottom of one of the barrels because you're only doing the tops. Nevertheless, Rabbi Eliezer says you can consider as though the tops and the bottoms are separate, as though each one of them is an independent unit, and therefore the bottom ones help to take out the top ones, meaning we look as long as there is, so you have 1 pound, you have 1 liter of truma, and you have between all the other barrels, both the top layers, the middle layers, the bottom layers, all together you have 100 of chulin, then you're good. Even though if you looked only at the tops, you'd only have, let's say, 20 tops. Nevertheless, we allow the bottoms and the middles and whatever to be considered as well. According to Rabbi Meir's understanding of Rabbi Eliezer. The reason is because Minat Torah, you only have to give truma from grapes, according to most of Shainim, you only have to give truma midaraisa from grain, grapes, and olives. Grain, wine, and oil, the famous triad. Yeah, this is the famous triad that we always have in the Torah of Dragon, Tirish, Fiyasar. Well, everything else is Rabban. Other Rishonim disagree with that. They hold, I think the Rambam holds, that truma of other fruits is also deraisa. He would explain our Gemara by saying that that's true, but on the other hand, the concept that you need 100 to be mevatel truma is only derabanan and it's not deraisa. Anyway, that's Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Yeshua, im yesh shamei pumin yalu, only if you have 100 top layers can you take out one and consider it truma and give it to the kohen and the other 100 are allowed to eat. If not, then the tops are osur, all of them, and the bottoms are mutter, because you know it didn't get mixed up in the bottom ones. So in other words, he's saying that so he's being more machmir. You can only look at the tops, because the suffix is only on the tops. It's only on the top layers. And that's Rabbi Meir's version. Then Rabbi Yehuda's version is Rabbi Yehuda Omer. Rabbi Eliezer Omer Yesham Meir Pumin Yalo Vim Lava Pumin Asurim Vashalayim Mutarin. That Rabbi Yehuda holds that what Rabbi Eliezer says is what Rabbi Meir said Rabbi Yeshua said. In other words, Rabbi Meir had a more lenient understanding of what both Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua said. Rabbi Yeshua has a stricter understanding. So he doesn't accept this concept that you can consider the tops and bottoms interchangeably, but he says that Rabbi Eliezer does say that at least, you, of course, you can consider all the tops and then combine them together. Now, here comes the point why we're bringing this in. Rabbi Yeshua, even if you have 300 tops, top layers, which is much more than the 100 you need for Bittul. Nevertheless, you can't be mevatel it, because the reason is because the pumin, these layers, are something that are sold by are something that sometimes are sold by number. That brings us back to what we were saying, that even eggs, which only sometimes are sold by number, Rabbi Yeshua would say that an egg is never bottled even in 1,000.
That's why
we're bringing this in. That's why we wanted to know which Tana says that eggs are not buckle in 1,000. The answer is Rabbi Yeshua, according to Rabbi Yehuda's understanding. Yeah. Then the Braita continues, Darsa be'igul, if you press these figs into a circle, into a circular mold, ve'eniyadeh be'ezeh igul darsa, and you don't know in which mold you put it, give hakoyalu, and everybody agrees that you can take it out, meaning that as long as you have 100 times as much chulin, that you can take out one and count it as truma. What does it mean? Give hakoyalu plotayu. The whole machlokas was about that case where you don't know in which eagle you put the truma. What the Braita meant to say with this last piece is darsa be'igul, if you took some figs and pressed them into one of the circles along with other figs of chulin. So he doesn't know where in the circle he pressed it in, whether, for example, on the north or the south side. Then everybody agrees that you can take it out because a piece of one of those wheels is definitely not a Davish of a minion. It's definitely not something sold by number. You just, like Rashi said before, you hack off a piece and sell it by weight. So he, before, in other words, the machlokes we were talking about was you took one whole litra of figs of truma and used that to make one of these wheels, and now you're mixed up with all the other wheels and you don't know which one are which. Here we're talking about you took, let's say, a half a litra of truma of figs of truma, and another half, the other half is consists of figs of chulin, and now you're not sure where in this circle, where within this circle, which slices of this pizza pie are truma. So then fine, then for sure it can be buffed as long as you have 100 times as much.
If you were counted, it would not.
If you had that point, it'd be sure it would not. That was the point. Yeah. Now, going back to the Braisa that we quoted yesterday, so we said the Braisa had started talking about a case of an egg that was laid on Shabbos or on Yom Tov, said that it was Mukta. Then it continued that a suffix is Osir, And we asked, what kind of suffix are you talking about? Wouldn't, according to most Ramaroyim so far, according to the understanding of most Ramaroyim so far of our Mishnah, the only reason the egg is also is Midrabanan. And Midrabanan, a suffix and something Midrabanan, you always go to Kula. So we were saying, why, and that's what forced us to say that the suffix was talking about that, whether it came from a kosher, a trichin, or a tray for one. Now we have another explanation of Ashiyama. La'olam suffix yomtiv suffix chol. We are talking, after all, that it's a suffix when the egg was laid, whether on Shabbos or on weekday. The thing is, have a davar sheyesh lematirin, because after all, it is a davar sheyesh lematirin. It is something that after Yom Tov is going to be mutter. And like we said yesterday, we call davar sheyesh lematirin afilu b'drabanan like bottle. Yesterday we said that a davar sheyesh lematirin is not bottle even in 1,000. We were assuming it meant a davar sheyesh lematirin, something that's also midaraisa right now, and later on is going to become mutter. Now Rav Ashi is saying that no, this principle applies even to something which is only also midrabanan. Well, but it's the same principle as before, according to Rashi, because why should you eat it? Why should you rely on bittul in order to eat it? Wait till tomorrow and you'll be able to eat it. Incidentally, I mean, you were mentioning yesterday about what if it's going to spoil. I mean, the truth is it does talk about in Shulchan Aruch that, yeah, if the thing is going to spoil by the time it's going to become mutter, fine, then you don't consider it a double shesh lamasirin. Okay, but a normal egg is not going to spoil in a day or two, you know. Yeah, okay.
Hypothetically.
Yeah. So therefore, yes. So therefore, we don't have to zetzain the braisa that all of a sudden it shifts from Yom Tov and Shabbos to Tshreifa. No, it's all, the whole thing is talking about Yom Tov and Shabbos, because no matter what, it's a davar sheyesh lamatirin, and therefore it's not possible. So again, you know, because according to Rashi, because you can wait till it's mutter. According to the Ran, because it's a matter of min b'minoy. Yeah. Tanya, going back now to our mission, all the way back to
that, we can conclude. What's the conclusion?
So that's the conclusion, according to Rav Ashi, is that that's why the Braisa is saying that, yes, if you have an egg which you're not sure whether it was laid on Yom Tov or on a weekday, and it gets mixed up with 1,000 other eggs, all of them are also on Yom Tov. You have to wait till Matzah Yom Tov to eat any one. Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, Acherim Oymim Mishum Rav Eliezer, the Acherim, which usually means Rav Meir, say in the name of Rav Eliezer, Beitza Teochel Hi Ve'ima, the egg can be eaten, both it and its mother. Which means, like Mishamai said in our Mishnah, Rabbi Eliezer, the Gemara mentions in a few places, Rabbi Eliezer Shamusihi, that Rabbi Eliezer, one meaning of Shamusi is that he was a Talmud of Mishamai. So therefore, he's going according to that. Yeah. So the Gemara asks, again, B'maya Skinen, what kind of case are we talking about, like we said at the beginning? If you're talking about that the chicken was meant for eating, Pshita, then of course both the mother, the hen, and the egg are mutter. But again, if it was a chicken that's meant for laying eggs, he ve'ima asura. And both it and its mother would be asur. Because, why? Because, now we did say before, we talked about the possibility that Beis Shammai does not have a problem with muhtza, with the generic kind of muhtza, and therefore they would say the chicken itself is mutter even in that case. But we do find later in our Masechta that Rabbi Eliezer does hold of generic muhtza. So therefore, if the chicken was meant for laying eggs, then it's muktzah. You did not have in mind before Yom Tov that you're going to eat it. Rabbi Eliezer would have a problem with that. So how can he say that you wouldn't be allowed to eat it? That you would be allowed to eat it, rather. Amar Rav Zera, te'echol agav ima. Okay, but it means that you can eat the egg along with the mother. What does that mean? Amar Abaye, kagun shalach hastam. For example, imagine you didn't specifically have in mind before Yom Tov, I want to keep this chicken to shecht on Yom Tov, or I want to keep it to lay eggs. You bought it without any specific intention in mind. Then on Yom Tov, so then what happens? If on Yom Tov nishchata, if you shecht it on Yom Tov, huvra de la achila emedes. So then we have birur. We retroactively we see that. To begin with, you bought it in order to eat it, in order to shecht it, and therefore we said the egg is mutter as well, because the egg is then at that point the egg is oichol de efros. It's the chicken itself was mutter to eat, and so is the egg. It's food that was separated, like a loaf of bread or an apple that was sliced up.
De la
chila, that it was meant all along for eating.
Even if he didn't know himself.
Right, because now we had a few times already in Shas. We had an Eruvin, we had in Yuma, the whole issue of Brera. It comes up in a dozen or so places in Shas. But in general, what we the machlokas tanoim, whether you're allowed to say Brera, whether you can do something like this, that retroactively you determine how things were all along. One difference is that it depends whether it's Daraisa or Drabanan. Here, where we're talking that it's a matter of mukta, which is Drabanan, or at least according to at least eating mukta, food that's mukta, that's a different thing. There's a machlokas Rishonim about that, but any other kind of mukta, whether it's Daraisa or not, because based on Achana Daraba, do we say Achana Daraba? Does Achana Daraba mean that? But here where we're talking about that retroactively you're making it food, that all along it was meant for food, then that's fine. That's the whole thing is on the Jirabana. If you didn't end up shechting on Yom Tov, Hoover or the legato base of my medicine, you see retroactively that all that you meant it for laying eggs. Or at least, I mean, you may shecht it sometime after Yom Tov, but at least over Yom Tov, it wasn't designated as food.
So that's what
Reb Zera means, that the egg you can eat along with the mother, meaning if you end up shechting the hen on Yom Tov, then you're allowed to eat the egg as well. That's one explanation. Rav Mari Omer, Guzma Katani. Rav Mari says no. When he says you can eat it and its mother, it's a guzma. It's like a figure of speech, like an exaggeration. Like he means to say, go ahead, you can eat the whole thing. Tanya, as in fact we learn in a Braisa, Acherim Omer Mishum Rav Eliezer. There's another Braisa where the Acherim say in the name of Rav Eliezer, Beitza, the same Acherim and the same Rav Eliezer, Beitza Te'ochel, He Ve'ima Ve'efreyach Ukutasei. The egg that's laid on Shabbos or on Yom Tov, you're allowed to eat it and its mother and the chick and its and the chick and the shell. Now, my Ukutasei, what do you mean the shell? You live a clip of mamash, do you actually mean the eggshell? A clip of Batschilin, you can't eat eggshells. Ella Efreyach Ukutasei. You're going to say then that it means not that you eat the shell itself, but you, even if a chick developed inside the shell, that you're allowed to eat that chick. But how so? Ab kam le pligi rabbanan alei the Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. The rabbanan argue with Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. We'll have that in a couple of days. Ela hecha the yotzal avra olam. They argue about if are you allowed to shecht and eat a baby chick that has not yet opened its eyes when a chick first hatches out of the egg. Its eyes aren't open yet. It takes, a day or two for it to open its eyes. According to Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, you're not allowed to shecht it at that point before it's opened its eyes. He learns from a pasuk that it's similar. That's similar to shrotim. We'll learn about it on Vav Amud Beis. It's not like a trefer really, but he learns from a pasuk about shrotim that chicks that haven't opened their eyes yet are also. Whereas the rabbanon disagree with him, but that's where it already yotzal avra olam, where it already hatched out of the egg. Avol hechad lo yotzal avra olam like kligi, and they both agree that if the chick is still inside the egg, you're not allowed to eat it.
Because you're not allowed to break the.
No, not because you're not allowed to break the shell, but because if it's still inside the shell. Then it's not completely, then the Chacham agree, it's like a sheret. Then the Chacham agree, it's like biting into an apple and finding a worm in it. Ella, so you have to say Efreyach Ukutasei Guzma, that when he's saying in this last braisa the chick and its shell, it means a guzma. It's just a figure of speech. Like, yeah, you're allowed to eat the whole thing, no matter, you know, whatever, however you look at it. It's the same thing over here in the earlier braisa, when it only mentioned the egg and its mother, then we have to understand that it's meant also as a guzma. The egg itself may be mutter because he doesn't have a problem with noilud, but the chicken would be usur because the chicken itself would be usur because of mukta, because Yitaka didn't have in mind to eat it before Yom Tov. I saw an interesting thing that Rav Pinchas Karitzer used to be very careful. He never liked when people exaggerated at all. So they asked him, or I think he writes in his sefer, Imre Pinchas or whatever the name of the sefer is. So how do we find that in some places we find the Gemara itself uses the guzma? He says because the reason why usually you shouldn't exaggerate is most people are usually not don't go, usually go through life being truthful. So if you exaggerate, then eventually you'll come to say actual lies. The Amoraim were Anshei Emes, they were people of truth, so therefore for them to say Guzma is not a big deal. Itmar. Now, they said a discussion as follows. Shabbos v. Yom Tov. What if you have Shabbos and Yom Tov adjacent to each other? So Yom Tov is on Friday or on Sunday. Rav Amar no lebezeh asura bezeh. Rav says that if an egg was laid on one of them, it's also on the other. Rav Yechon, Rav Amar no lebezeh, which Haris bezeh, and Rav Yechon says if it was laid on one, it's mutter on the other. The Gemara says, Neima Kasava Rav Kedusha Achasi. So you're telling me that Rav holds that the 2 days are considered one long Kedusha? So if you have that Yom Tov, if you have Shabbos going immediately into Yom Tov, then it's considered one long 48-hour period of Kedusha. How can you say that? The halacha is like the four zkenim in the name of Rabbi Yezer. The four zkenim are in a braisa in Eruvin. There's four tanoim from the next to last generation of tanoim, Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel and Rabbi Shmuel Benosher Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Shmuel Benosher Rabbi Yechon ben Breika, and then two others that I don't remember just now, Rabbi Yossi ben Yehuda, I think, and I don't remember who the fourth one is, that they all hold. Who are all saying in the name of Rabbi Yezer, that they all say that that Shabbos and Yom Tov are considered two separate days of Kedusha. Which means, for example, it talks about over there in Erevin, that for example, if you want to have an Erev, if Yom Tov is on Friday, let's say, and you want to walk on Yom Tov in one direction out of the city, and on Shabbos in a different direction, then yeah, you can put down two Erevin, one for and suppose that you want to go the same place, both Yom Tov and Shabbos, you will have to put down your Erev Tumen twice. Putting it down for Yom Tov does not do for Shabbos, unless it's still there come Shabbos, then fine, but otherwise not. You have to check on it. We had a whole case over there where you check on it, and then you can eat it right there in the field. So that's because we consider it two kedushas, right. And Rav is saying that's the halacha. Tosis points out you might have thought there's a different reason why Rav would say that an egg that's laid on Yom Tov is also on the following Shabbos, because it's still also Bein HaShemoshes, because Bein HaShemoshes might still be Yom Tov, and once it's muktzeh Bein HaShemoshes, then it's muktzeh for the whole day. And Tosfos discusses that you don't necessarily say that unless it's mukta based on a mitzvah. Like, for example, we talked about in Sukkah about the noi Sukkah and so forth. Not over here, just plain old mukta. Yeah. Ella hacha b'achana d'rabba kamitzvigi. So rather here the machloikas of Rav and Rabbi Yochanan is about the concept of achana d'rabba that we had the other day, that Rav had learned from a pasuk that everything that you eat on Shabbos or on Yom Tov has to have been prepared on a weekday. Rav is say achana d'rabba. Rav holds of this concept. Rabbi Yochanan loves say achana d'rabba, and Rabbi Yochanan does not. So Rav says like this: if the egg is laid on Yom Tov, for example, that means that on Yom Tov you prepared for Shabbos. So not you prepared, it was prepared naturally. But even so, there was a preparation done on Yom Tov for Shabbos, and therefore you can't eat it on Shabbos. Rabbi Yochanan says, I don't have a problem with preparing on Yom Tov for Shabbos. There's no problem to Raisa in that. Which Tosfos asks, you know, we said, when Rabba brought up his point about Achana d'Rabba, he said that an egg is always completed the day before it's laid. So if that's the case, if the egg is laid on Friday, which is Yom Tov, then it was completed on Thursday. What's the problem? So Tosfos says, indeed, that's true. But on the other hand, the fact is, the laying of the egg is also a little bit of a hachana. It's not as much of a hachana as it actually finishing developing inside the chicken, but it's still a shtickle hachana. Yeah. Also, Tosfos gives another reason, because let's say, for example, that we would say let's take the other way around. Tosfos gives the example that Yom Tov comes out after Shabbos. We know if the egg is laid on Sunday Yom Tov, then it's Aser. That's a given. We've said that already. So what would it mean then that if when it's laid on Shabbos you're allowed to eat it on Sunday? Then effectively yes. Then Shabbos is directly preparing for Yom Tov, because you're only allowed to eat it on Yom Tov because it was laid the day before instead of that day.
On Shabbos.
Yeah, and you can't do that. Whereas Rabbi Yochanan doesn't have that issue. I think my point out, Kitanoi, this is like a Macholik Kitanoim, know that B'Shabbos Ta'ochel B'Yom Tov, Braita says that if the egg was laid on Shabbos, you're allowed to eat it the next day Yom Tov, B'Yom Tov Ta'ochel B'Shabbos, Rabbi Yehuda, I remember Shom Rabbi Yehuda, Adayin Hi Macholikas, but Rabbi Yehuda says in the name of Rabbi Yehuda that no, we still have the same Macholikas B'Shamah B'Tilul even in that case. B'Shamah says you can eat it, well they say you can eat it even on the first day, and B'Tilul says you can't even eat it on the second day. It's similar to the machlokes we had yesterday of Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim in the case of Rosh Hashanah. The Gemara tells, "Ushvizichnei d'Rav Ada ba'Ava havel uhanach beitz miyom tov l'Shabbos." The host of Rav Ada ba'Ava had eggs that were laid on Yom Tov, and he wanted to be able to eat them on Shabbos. In those times, the Ush Bezichne means his host, like the person he boarded by, the Chachamim would travel out of town to learn in yeshiva, sometimes for years at a time. So they're, we find in various places the chaff, their hosts, the people who they boarded with. Yeah. So he comes to Rav Adba Abba to ask him, "Am I allowed to roast this egg today and eat it tomorrow?" So Rav Adba Abba, apparently this Ush Bezichon was a shtickle Talmud Chacham himself that he knew to ask, and from the way that Rav Adba Abba answers him, because Rav Adba Abba answers him, "Am my daitcha? What do you think, Rav and Rav Yechon and Halacha Rav Yechon? You're thinking that in general, whenever Rav and Rav Yechon argue, the Halacha is like Rav Yechon, and in that case, since Rav Yechon is Meikel, then you're thinking you should be able to be Meikel? No." Rav Yochanan will only allow you to swallow it raw the next day. But you're not allowed to do anything with it on that day. On Yom Tov itself, it's actually muktzah. But you can't pick it up in order to roast it. So necessarily, when Rav Yochanan is saying you're allowed to eat it on Shabbos, all he means is if you want, you can eat it raw. Vahotanya, and indeed, thus we learn in a braisa, the braisa that we had yesterday, achas beitza shenol de b'shabbos, whether an egg that was laid on Shabbos, achas beitza shenol de b'yomtiv, or whether it was laid on yomtiv, ein metaltlin oyse, you're not allowed to move it, lo lechasas bo sakli, not to cover with it a utensil, v'lo lismach b'kari amita, and not to support the leg of a bed with it. So therefore we see from that that the egg is actually mukti, you're not allowed to touch it. Well, if you're not allowed to touch it, then you're not allowed to roast it. A similar case, Ushbizichne de Rapapa, the host of Rapapa, Ba'amrilahu Gabra Dafla Kame de Rapapa, or some say that was a stam person who came to ask Rapapa a Shaila, Havaluhanach Beitim Shabbos the Yamtiv. He had the other way around, the eggs were laid on Shabbos and he wanted to eat them on Sunday Yamtiv. Asala Kame, so he comes to Rapapa, Amalei Ma'ulu Mechlun Lamachar, am I allowed to eat these eggs tomorrow on Yamtiv? So here he's not asking about cooking them today, it's Shabbos, but am I allowed to eat them on Yamtiv? Amalei, so the Papa tells him, I can't answer you now. Zil ha'idna v'talamachar. Go now and come back tomorrow with your shayla. Why? Because this is already, it's now already after the meal of Yom Tov, and derav la'muki amora ilavein miyoma tova l'chavre mishum shichrus. We find that Rav, who lived long before a Papa, you would not set up an amora. An amora was, a person with darshan, and the amora would announce what he's saying publicly to everybody. So he would not set up an amora, in other words, he would not darshan miyoma tova l'chavre from late in the day on one Yom Tov until the next day, mishum shichrus, because of drunkenness. Meaning, we're still talking about 2 days in a row, Shabbos and Yom Tov, right. But he's saying, what Rav Papa is saying is like this. We find that Rav, whenever there was a 2 day Yom Tov, so Rav would darshan in the morning, and in his drasha, he would mention pisme halacha. Then later on, though, after they had eaten the Yom Tov meal, he would not darshan. So he would not have an amora because he drank wine during the meal. And the din is you're not allowed to paskin halacha after you've drunk. Now technically he would have only had to wait a little while. Technically you only have to wait till the wine wears off. But still, he, to be on the safe side, would wait till the next day to give his next drasha. So the Papa says, by the same token, then I don't want to answer your question today. It's Shabbos afternoon now. I already ate my meal. I drank some wine. So therefore, I don't want to answer your shaila now. Come back tomorrow. Ki asalamacher, when the guy came back tomorrow, on the later, Papa tells him, Eichu hashta ishtaloi. If it had been, if it would have been that I would have forgotten. If I had, after all, not been careful about that. If I had paskin to you yesterday, the way immediately ishtaloi, I would have made a mistake. I would have made a mistake and said, the usual rule is that when Rav and Rav Yechanan argue, the halacha is like Rav Yechanan, so I would have thought to say the egg is mutter. But now I realize, now having slept on it, I realize that no, that my first thought was wrong. The halacha is like Rav in three dinim, whether lakula or lachumra. We're going to have, we had one just now about an egg that was laid on Shabbos and you want to eat it on Yom Tov or vice versa. We're going to have two other machlokes, and one about the two days of any other Yom Tov, and the other one and a third one about 2 days of Rosh Hashanah. In each case, Rav argues with somebody. And Rava says the halacha is always like is even though usually the halacha is like Rabbi Yochanan against Rav, it needs to be machlokas, and the halacha is like Rav against whoever it is he's arguing about, whether Rav is being makel or being machmir. In this case, for example, he's being makel. In other case, in others of the three cases, he's being machmir. In the other one, in other cases, he's being makel. But yes, the halacha in this case is like Rav. And so Rav Papa is saying it's a good thing that I didn't answer yesterday, because my first I would have made a mistake. Yeah. Amar Rav Yechanan, Eitzim shenashu min adekel b'Shabbos, wood that fell off a tree on Shabbos, also asikon b'yomtiv. You're not allowed to burn that wood on Yomtiv. So if Yomtiv comes out on Sunday, you're not allowed to use that wood for firewood. Ba'al teshiveni beit. So and Rav Yechanan says, don't try to answer me back based on the egg. I'm saying that if an egg is laid on Shabbos, you're allowed to eat it the next day Yomtiv. So why is the wood any different? The difference is like this. Beitza. My time of beitza. What's the reason why I'm saying the egg is mutter? Mishum to be yoma nami chazi legoma. Because the fact is, an egg, you would be capable of doing something with it that day. You could eat it raw. V'loy kashari la'ad l'macher. And we're saying that we're not allowing it until the next day. Therefore, made the idea to bas yoma asura. So people realize that, yes, an egg that was laid on Yom Tov is also that day. Because they realize, otherwise, we could have done something with it. So one second. When the egg is laid on Shabbos, what we're saying is like this. People will realize when this egg is off limits on Shabbos, they're not going to think, you know why it's off limits is because, practically speaking, there's nothing you can do with it on Shabbos. You can't cook it, for example. You don't have to cook it. You could have eaten it raw. So the fact that the Chachamim are telling you don't even eat it raw helps you remember, oh, an egg that is laid on Shabbos is also until the end of Shabbos. As opposed to Eitzim. No. If it weren't for the issue of an egg that's laid on Shabbos, then yes, you'd be allowed to because you could eat it raw. That's what we're saying. We would have been able to, so therefore, the fact that the Chachamim are telling you that you're not allowed to, that helps fix in your mind this idea that you're not allowed to. On the other hand, Eitzim delechazu leyamahu, but wood is not suitable on that day anyway. You can't burn wood on Shabbos. So if you're going to allow a person to burn it the next day, then he might seem to say, you know what, really, wood that falls off the tree is actually mutter even on the day it falls off, even let's say it falls off on Yom Tov. It's just I couldn't burn it yesterday because it was Shabbos. But a person might think that in principle that the wood itself is mutter right away when it falls off the tree, which is not.
Because it's Shabbos, but it's not.
Right. Which is not. It's also because of Muktzah. So a person might not realize that, and therefore we will ask it on Yom Tov as well. Amr of Masna, Eitzim Shenashrum, a similar din, Eitzim Shenashrum in Adekal L'Sechatana B'Yom Tov, if wood fell off a tree into the oven on Yom Tov, so that it fell directly into the oven, you don't have to move it anywhere, you're allowed to add to it wood that you already had prepared for firewood before Yom Tov, and then you're allowed to set the whole thing on fire on Yom Tov.
If it fell into it.
Yeah, so it fell in by itself, so you're adding more wood. So you're adding more wood in order to, No, you can't start when the wood itself is also, no. But aren't you moving around something that's also? I mean, when the wood itself is mukta, when you have to move it around in order to get the fire started, so then you're moving something that's mukta.
Can you start a fire on Yom Tov?
You can't start a fire, but you can extend a fire. No, we're talking about extending a fire. You bring there a burning candle or whatever, and then. Well, that topic about fire on Yom Tov, we'll talk about much more in the fourth parak. Yeah. So the answer is given to Ruba de Hetero, since most of the wood is mutter, ki kamahapach behetero kamahapach. And when you're turning it over, when you're moving it here and there, mostly what you're moving is stuff that's mutter. So therefore, it's not a problem. But Maram Shif points out that the Gemara's initial thought was when we say Mar Ba'alayim Eitzim didn't necessarily mean you have to have more non mukta wood than the mukta wood. We thought that it originally meant you're allowed to just add a little extra wood. Then you have zevzeg gurdim. Then you have whatever you're cooking with that wood is not only coming from something that's also, it's also coming from something that's mutter, and therefore it should be allowed. Then the Gemara pointed out this problem of mukta, and because of the problem of mukta, therefore you have to say that you put in more good wood than the wood that fell in.
Good meaning
that you're allowed to move on Yom Tov, that you had set aside from before Yom Tov. Yeah. But when you're adding more wood over there, aren't you being mevatel an issur deliberately? And we know that you're not allowed to do that. In the case of truma, for example, that we had before, you know, if you have a saw of truma falls into 50 saw of chulin, you're not allowed to say, well, you know what, let me add another 50 saw of chulin to the mix so that it won't be maduma and I'll be able to take out the one of truma. You can't do that. If another 50 fall in by accident, fine, but otherwise not. Ein mevatel issur hatchila. This is a basic concept, and yeah.
By adding,
you'll be mevatel it. The answer is hanimila b'daraisa. That is true of something that is daraisa, like truma. But here, where it's only a matter of dirabanan, and it's mukta, then indeed you can be a mevatel. The Alter Rebbe adds in Shulchan Aruch, actually, that there's another reason as well, because not only is something dirabanan over here, but when do you get the benefit from the word? When it's being burnt. So therefore, it's like, you know, there's less of an issue of using something of mukta, considering that you're only using it as it's getting destroyed. As opposed to regular mukta, which
why is this less than an issue when it's frozen?
Because then it's destroyed. Then you don't have the issur there anymore. The issur is not going to be bane anymore. Tosfos also talks about the issue.
You're using it.
You're using it, but you're using it as you're burning it. We had a similar concept. We had a similar concept in Sukkah, I think, also about the difference between something that you have hanah from and the thing still continues to exist versus something that the hana consists of consuming it. Yeah. Tosfos also discusses there's a difference between, for example, mukta, which is completely dirabanan. The whole concept of mukta is really only dirabanan, as opposed to, for example, you know, before we were talking about the figs, where even though truma of figs, according to Tosfos and most of Rishonim, is only dirabanan, but the concept of truma is daraisa. So truma of figs is a rabbanan extension of something daraisa, as opposed to mukta, which is something completely new.
You're more careful with someone who's...
with something that is an extension of something daraisa. Right. Hello?
Brilliant.
Yeah. You did get my text, right?
I don't get my text at all.
Oh, sorry. We actually started very late by had car trouble and was about 45 minutes late.
Okay.
Yeah. What about a lot of Ashi? What about according to Rav Ashi, who said on Amud Aleph that anything that's Dava Shiesh La Matir, and anything that will eventually become Mutter, even if Drabanan can't become Bottle, Ma'ikul Meimel, and what are you going to say according to him? And the answer is, like we just said, Hani Mila Hecha De Isili Sura Ve'ene, there is a difference, though, still, about an Isser which exists in its original form. Like, for example, we were talking about over there about the egg. Hacha mikla kali yisura. Over here, eventually the issur is getting burnt up. So you can't really speak of that it's a dover shiyash lamaturin. By the time Yom Tov ends, there's not going to be anything left of it. And therefore, it's a different situation. Therefore, even according to Rav Ashi, you could be mevatelit. But again, in order to avoid the problem of mukta, you need to be mevatelit with more heter than issur. You can't just say more, just more, you know, just a bit more, yeah. The point is, you can't just say, like my Ram Shif was saying, you can't just say that you're going to add a little bit of heter, and therefore now whatever bread you're baking with it or whatever is brought about by two things, one which is also and one which is mutter, and therefore the bread will be mutter. No, that's not good enough. Okay, so that was one. So far, that thing about wood was kind of a tangent between these machlokas and Rav about eggs. So we have the first one again about Shabbos and Yom Tov adjacent to each other. Now the second one, Itmar Shnei Yom Tov Shal Goldius, the two Yom Tov that we keep outside Eretz Yisrael. Rav Amar Nol de Bezem Uteres Bezer. Rav says that an egg that was laid on one day is mutter on the other day. But Rav Asi Amar Nol de Bezer Asura Bezer. And Rav Asi says that it's also on the other one. So here Rav is being maple, unlike in the previous one he was being machmer. And again,
that happens which day?
No, so if an egg is laid the first day of Pesach, you're allowed to eat it the second day, provided the second day is not Shabbos.
Right.
Or the first day is not Shabbos, for that matter, yeah. But Rav Ashi says no. So you're telling me Rav Ashi holds that the 2 days of Yom Tov Sheni Shel Goliath are considered one long Kedusha? But Rav Ashi actually would say Havdalah from one day to the next. At the end of the first day of Yom Tov, he would actually say Havdalah going into the second day, which shows that he held that... not two separate days, actually. So Rashi points out like this. Rav Ashi held like this. Why do we in Chutz La'aretz keep 2 days? Because of Sfeika D'Yoma. Because we don't know what day the Sanhedrin declared Rosh Chodesh. As the Gemara we'll talk about in a couple of lines. The thing is, though, in principle, you could know most of the time because you could use the calculations, all those intricate calculations that the Rambam gives in Hilchos Kiddush HaChodesh, you could use those to figure out when the moon is visible, and therefore when Beis Din is likely to have declared Rosh Chodesh. So yeah, there could always be a glitch. It could happen that for whatever reason, it was cloudy and no Edim showed up, or whatever it is, But generally speaking, you'd be able to do that. Rav Asi felt that in his times already, in Bavel, they knew, as the Gemara is going to say in a minute, they knew these details, all these calculations, so they could, in principle, figure out when the Sukkot is. So therefore, why are they keeping a second day of Yom Tov? Well, but that means the second day really is Chol. There's no real reason to keep it as Yom Tov, only because of Minag. So therefore, he would make Abdullah, must say the first day of Yom Tov. Vashvas after the second one. Well, maybe not, because the health is only mitzvah minig. I don't know.
It wouldn't be mevazeh the second day.
So that's actually the reason why in Shulchan Aruch it says why we don't make Havdalah at the end of the first day, because we don't want to be mevazeh the second day. Right, but Rav Asi, Gemara says Rav Asi sepukim esapkulei. Actually, it's not because Rav Asi knew for a fact when Yom Tov really is. It's rather because Rav Asi had a suffix whether we have an absolute obligation to keep 2 days or not. When we say that in Golos we have to keep 2 days, is it that the Chachamim, that the earlier Chachamim made that as a blanket thing, you always have to do that, whether you know Kavur D'Yarcha or not, whether you know the calculations or not, or is it only when you don't know the calculations, when you don't know when Rosh Chodesh really was, then you have to keep 2 days. If you have a way of finding out, for example, you can calculate it, then you don't have to. So Rav Asi was not sure about that. So he did it b'chumra both ways. So he would say Havdalah to be on the safe side in case indeed they only have to keep 1 day Yom Tov. But he'd still keep the second day as well.
So if
Pashas after the second day, he would make Havdalah again. So therefore, so that doesn't prove that Rav Asi. Rav Asi does hold that the that's the thing. Rav Asi may not be sure whether it's one kedusha or not.
That's why he's doing it.
And that's why. So that's why Rav Asi is saying that even an egg that's laid on 1 day is also the second day, because we don't know whether Chachamim made it an absolute obligation on Bnei Chutz La'aretz to have 2 days Yom Tov, or whether it's just contingent on whether you know or not.
But even if you knew that the Chachamim made a calculation, you would still.
No, that's the thing. If he knew that the Chachamim had lachatchila established that Bnei Chutz La'aretz only have to keep 2 days when they don't know better,
right,
but as soon as they find out they do not have to, well, Rav Asi knows. He found out. He's able to figure out when Rosh Chodesh really was supposed to be. So therefore, he would only have to keep 1 day Yom Tov. Then in that case, why is he keeping a second day? Minig Avitzeinu Biyadeinu. Fine, not already. Minig Avitzeinu Biyadeinu is not strong enough to consider it Kedusha Achat, to consider it one 48-hour Kedusha. Mashenkin, if we say that the Chachamim made it an absolute obligation, whether you know, you don't know, you always have to keep 2 days Yom Tov and Chutz La'aretz, well then Rav Asi is holding that it would be Kedush Achas. Amar Rav Zera, Tava say that Rav Asi is Saber. In fact, it seems more logical, like what Rav Asi is saying. Because nowadays we in Babel know how to calculate the calendar. V'kav din in Tre Yomim, we still make 2 days. The Gemara mentions in a few places, Shmuel, for example, is a story in Cholin where Shmuel writes to Rabbi Yechanan that he sends him the detailed calculations of when the moon is and is and isn't visible for the next 60 years. So he knew how to calculate this stuff. He sent this to Rabbi Yechanan, and now it's Israel. There's another in Rosh Hashanah, there's a similar thing where Shmuel says, I would be capable of setting up the calendar for the whole Bavel. Because he knew, but if not for the fact that the Torah says it has to be done in Eretz Yisrael. In other words, they're saying, we know in Bavel, and yet we keep 2 days. Obviously, it must be we're only keeping the second day because the Minig Avitzeinu Biyadeinu. Or no, on the contrary, the only reason why we're keeping the second day, it must be not because of Minig Avitzeinu Biyadeinu, because we already know there shouldn't be a reason we even have to keep Minig Avitzeinu. The reason must be because the earlier Chachamim, when they established that in Goyla you have to keep 2 days, they meant it as a blanket thing. Always 2 days of Yom Tov in Goyla, whether you know, whether you don't know.
Well,
Because you don't need Minagavasenu then, because Minagavasenu would be, as we'll have soon, that if there might come a time when you don't know the calculations, then you need to fall back on Minagavasenu Biadenu. But if you know the calculations, and Rabbi Zeira is saying it's a given, all of us involved all know them now, then it has to be because the Chachamim made it, yeah. However, Amar Abaye Kavaseder Rav Mistabra, on the contrary, it's more logical, like what Rav is saying, that they really are Shtei Kedushas, the 2 days are considered separate things of Kedusha, and that the only reason why we're keeping the second day is because of Minagavaseinu Biyodeinu. Ditznan, because we learned in the Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah, Barishona Hoyu Masi and Masuris. Originally they used to light torches. The Mishnah describes over there how what person would go up to one mountain near Yerushalayim and hold up a torch and wave it in all directions, and a person up on the next mountain 25 miles away would see him and wave another one, and that's the message could be spread very quickly. So then with that system, they could know in Bavo already that night when Rosh Chodesh was, and they didn't need to keep through. And so 1 second. Mishakilkalu Akusim, when the Kusim messed things up, Kusim would live in the center of Eretz Yisrael, so they would, in order to trick the Yidden, they would sometimes light, they'd light these bonfires, these torches, when they're not supposed to be. So then they made a Takana, they have to send out Shlochim. Now, why is the Mishnah mentioning that? The Mishnah is not giving us history lessons. So if the Mishnah is going and telling us about the Masuris, about the torches, must be there's a reason, because the implication is, if the problem with the Kusim were to go away, then we would go back to using the torches, and then we in Bava would be able to keep 1 day. Basically, because of the Kusim, because they had to start sending out Shluchim, and the Shluchim cannot reach Bava in time. So yes, in other words, Abaye is saying that no, this that we keep 2 days of Yom Tov in Chutzlar, it really is a contingency. It's not an absolute thing that we must always keep 2 days of Yom Tov. If in the times when there were torches, we didn't have to keep 2 days. If the torches were to be reestablished, we still wouldn't have to keep 2 days. And the matur shluchim abdin and chad yoma. And when the shluchim do reach a certain place, then they keep 1 day. Which means even in Babel, for example, usually Babel is out of reach of the shluchim. They won't get there by Sukkot or Pesach. Let's say 1 year it happens, they manage to make exceptionally good time, and they're there before Sukkot. Good, then they only have to keep 1 day Sukkot that year.
And otherwise they
have to do two. So therefore, we see that it's not an absolute thing that you always have to keep 2 days in Gola.
That's
what Abaye is saying. So they want to ask the Hashtag the Adin and the Kavua the Yarcha my time Abdin and Treyu. I mean, okay, well nowadays, now that we all know the Kavua the Yarcha, now this is a little bit different than what we were saying before. When Rav Zeira was saying we know Kavua the Yarcha, he meant that we know the detailed calculations of how to figure out when the moon is and isn't visible, and therefore when based in Eretz Yisrael's Mekadosh L'Chodesh. What we're saying here now, that we know Kavua the Yarcha, means after Hillel set up the fixed calendar that we use nowadays, the Rambam writes that they used it, that he set it up that until the time of Abaye and Rava, who are speaking in our Gemara over here, they used Kiddush HaChodesh HaPiyariya. Afterwards, they went to calculation. So we all know the calculation. The luchos are printed. My time, Abdin and Treyemi. So why do we still keep 2 days Yom Tov? Kavua the Yarcha means the Kavus of the moon. We know here we don't need the intricate calculations. We don't need the ones that the Rambam presents in the last 9 Prakim of Kiddush HaChodesh, or the ones we have to know the how fast the sun moves per day and how fast the moon moves per day, and to finagle with all the degrees and minutes and seconds and whatnot. Nowadays we use a much simpler calculation. The Rambam writes that an average school child could learn it in 3 or 4 days. Which is that each month is a fixed length, the Chav Tet Yud Beis Tashtag. And we have the 4 dechias.
Right.
So that's how we do it. So we know all that. So why do we need to keep 2 days? We know that Elul is always 29 days. We know Adar is always 29 days. There's never a Suffolk anymore. So why do we have 2 days? The answer is Mishum Deshocho Mitam, because they sent a message from there, meaning from Eretz Yisrael. Hizaru Minagav Eseichem. You have to be careful. Keep the minag of your ancestors in your hands. Why? Zimnin de Gozra Malchus Zera, it could happen that the Goyim will make a Zera that you're not allowed to learn Torah. And then you'll forget these detailed calculations. You'll forget the Soda Eber. So and then you'll end up getting messed up. So therefore, to be on the safe side, keep 2 days even now, even when there's no Zera. Yeah. And that's of course what we do. And there's also there is a medrash that says that brings a deeper reason for it, that the Eidush that says to the Yidden, you know, you didn't want to keep one day of Yom Tov and Eretz Yisrael, so you now in Chutz La'aretz you have to keep two. Or actually, I think the Jewish people themselves are pictured as saying in this medrash, you know, I didn't keep one day in Eretz Yisrael, now I have to keep 2 days in Chutz La'aretz. In Chassidus, it talks about it in a more positive sense, you know, that Kiflayim with the Shia, that the Golos is, you know, with all the negativity and everything of Golos, you come out with a higher thing of it, that you end up with 2 days of Kedusha instead of one. No, also the idea that the Bnei Eretz Yisrael are able to absorb all the Kedusha of the Yom Tov in one day, we need 2 days to absorb all of it. But those are all drashas, and those are all b'pnimius and yanim, but the basic reason, Al Pi Halacha, is from our Gemara over here, Mishum Gzeiras HaMalchus.
Not even.
So it is Minhag Avosenu. There was it's Minhag Avosenu because of Gzeiras HaMalchus. We have to continue keeping Minhag Avosenu because of the possibility of Gzeiras HaMalchus.
It's not like we said previously, was not because of just Minhag.
No, before that, originally, so that's the thing. What we're saying basically is like this. There were a few different stages. At one stage, they only had to keep one day in Bavo because they had the torches. Later on, after they had the shluchim, then usually they'd keep 2 days. Sometimes the shluchim would get there early and they'd only have to keep 1 day. But most years they kept 2 days. Later on, so therefore, even when they knew the detailed calculations, the when the moon is visible, when it's not, they still kept 2 days. Either according to Rav Asi had a suffix, whether because that was the original takana they had to keep 2 days, or just because of Minhag Avosenu. And then finally, once they established the fixed calendar, then they also said, along with that, you, Bnei Chutz La'aretz, have to continue keeping 2 days.
Because of
the possibility of Gzeiras HaMalchus. Yeah.
How come they didn't do this? But they could have been Gzeiras HaMalchus even in Eretz Yisrael.
Because in Eretz Yisrael, they never kept 2 days to begin with.
Right.
In Eretz Yisrael, the Shluchim could always reach every place in time.
Right.
So they never kept 2 days, so therefore there's no Minhag Avosenu to keep.
Right. Even if there was
the people, the individual, the Hamoin Am might forget the calculations, but the Chachamim can still send in the Shluchim. Yeah, exactly.
Going back.
I have to.
Backward.
Yeah.